Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Many Americans will never forget where they were 15 years ago on September 11th when two planes took out the World Trade Center in New York City, a commercial airliner crashed into a Pennsylvania field, and yet another into the western reach of the Pentagon. But an increasing number of Americans, an entire generation, has no firsthand recollection. To them, it is a history lesson. Today, we're talking about how that lesson has been taught and how the lessons have changed over time. Coming up, we'll hear from two award-winning children's authors who have won accolades for their efforts to bring this story home. Joining us now from Brown University is Curriculum Development Director at the Choices Program. It's a nonprofit education organization based at Brown, Andy Blackadar. The Choices Program develops lessons plans that cover current and historical international issues, such as the September 11th terrorist attacks. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Obviously, history is filled with tragic events, and there are plenty of them as monumental or worse than 9/11. Does the fact that 9/11 is more recent change the approach that educators take to the material?
That's a good question. I would say yes, it makes it more challenging to teach and to find materials on. It doesn't have the benefit of historians, for example, looking back over 230 years of, say, for example, the writing of the Constitution. So the challenge is, of course, is the scholarship and thinking that's available on it. But then also for most teachers were alive for it and live through it, and I think it's fair to say that it probably profoundly affected most of them.
If at the time of 9/11, is it the sort of thing that teachers, and I guess I kind of like regret not asking teacher friends of mine this question beforehand, but is it the sort of thing when it happens and a week or two later they start thinking, how am I going to teach this?
I would guess that's what happened, and that's pretty much what happened to us. At the Choices Program here at Brown, we were it was a beautiful sun morning in September, and sitting in our office, and all of us were horrified. We have the benefit of being at an institute with people who think about international issues and a community of scholars who think about this thing, but all of us were taken aback. But pretty quickly, after a few days, we all thought, okay, now what can we do? How can we provide resources to teachers who are going to be struggling to deal with this and to present it to their students and to engage them in really what was a profound historical event? That was obvious to everyone immediately. But then how do you begin to talk about it in a way that's engaging, responsible, critical, right? Developing the skills that teachers need to develop in all of their students, but that's also not completely terrifying, because I remember it being a pretty terrifying time.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how the lessons and the history of the terrorist attacks of 9/11 are shared in the classroom from young children through college. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I know a lot of teachers are in class right now. We're going to be hearing from a teacher coming up in the next segment. But if you're a teacher or if you were a teacher at the time and have spent time doing this, maybe you can share how you taught this lesson. My guest is Andy Blackadar. He is the Curriculum Development Director at the Choices Program. That's a nonprofit organization that develops curriculum on such topics at Brown University. What about the geography of it? What have you come to learn about how geography plays a role in how the lessons are taught, say, if you're in Tucson, Arizona versus, you know, the Queens?
Our curriculum materials are in use all over the United States. Mm-hmm. We're in about 8,000 high schools, which comes out to about a third of the high schools in the United States. So I think that this topic held and still holds universal interest for everybody. Ultimately, we want to help teachers help their students become engaged in American democracy, participants in discussions about things that affect them immediately. So geography, I don't know, except to say that it's a pretty universal issue.
Well, when I was reading about different approaches to it, one teacher said, well, every year they do a field trip and they walk down the street to what now is the memorial, but, you know, over time was different iterations of the site that we know as the World Trade Center site.
Right. Yeah, no, a good friend of mine was actually teaching her kindergarten class on 9/11 within sight of the Twin Towers, and she had the terrible experience of taking her students outside of the building and then watching the buildings come down. Hmm. And she had to tell her students to run. That's a terrifying thing for a teacher to say, especially with kindergartners. So I think, you know, obviously people experience stories and history differently depending on where they live. But also, I would say that the image of the Trade Center and the Pentagon and even the memorial in Pennsylvania, right, those are iconic images for Americans and the immediacy of that. I would say that that's an image that most people have seen. I would say also that terrorism, right, is it's something that we've seen around the United States following September 11th, and people are attuned to it and thinking about it and concerned about it.
I kind of wonder how children who were very young or born after the event, what do you compare it to, say, in the baby boomer generation? Is it World War II? Is it what do you compare it to when it comes to the monumental nature of it and its impact on the United States?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I was born more or less about the same time after the Second World War as today's students were born after 9/11.
Okay.
And so, you know, what affected their parents and what affected my parents has a different effect on it. And actually, it's pretty clear that there have been significant and important policy changes, right, that the U.S. government has taken since 9/11 that are going to affect young people today. But we want to make sure that they understand what happened. And I think a good way to do that is that we have students interviewing people who experienced 9/11 and asking them questions and talking to their parents or talking to other family members, talking to people that they know. So that they can understand how vivid it was for those of us who experienced it.
I was reading about some of the strategies teachers are using, having their students go out and interview people who were aware and of what was going on, who were adults at the time of the attacks. And they said that the kids are often, it's the first time sometimes that they've really talked to their parents about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. And there's lots of interesting things that come from that. Kids also have siblings who know other people who've been affected by it. So I was, you know, people are serving in the military overseas now. Often people graduating from high school are joining the military. So there are sort of ripple effects that go through everyone's lives. And this is a way to try to look at this event as an event of history and to look at it from the lens of today and try to understand it and the impact that it's had on all of us.
The curriculum you've developed incorporates role-playing mm-hmm. into the lessons. Can you talk about how you use role-playing as a teaching tool in the context of 9/11?
Sure. So all of our curriculum units have role-playing in them, and the goal is to get students to engage around a particular policy perspective. Or we call them policy options. And the idea is to create a situation, a simulation in class where students are presenting. It could be to the U.S. Foreign Relations Committee, it could be to the United Nations, could be a different setting. And they're asked to take on different roles and arguing for different points of view. And one of the, so in our curriculum on terrorism, we have four different options, we call them. And the four options are lead an assault on terrorism, collaborate to fight terrorism, defend the homeland, and then also address the root causes of terrorism. And this is a pedagogical device that's pretty, teachers tell us, is very effective because what it forces students to do are two things. One is they have a lot at stake in trying to master the material because they're going to be standing up and engaging in a debate, discussion, and deliberation with their classmates. So that's very, very important. The second piece of it is that Teachers often assign students. Students are assigned randomly to these roles, so sometimes they're forced to argue a point of view that they may not agree with already. And that helps them to sort of understand different points of view and understand the logic of different arguments. And ultimately, after they do that, we ask students to think further about what their ideas about what their own option would be to deal with terrorism. So we ask them to identify what their values are, what things that are important, to prioritize policies that they think are important and significant. And in this way, it gives all students a voice in public policy, and that's the goal, to get them engaged, to get them thinking about these things in a way that's meaningful for them.
A lot of these kids, they may not have grown up with a lot of good knowledge from their parents. They haven't had these conversations maybe about 9/11, but a lot of them have grown up with a lot of the stereotyping that's gone on since 9/11 and that sort of thing, particularly when it comes to Muslim Americans. Yep. And Muslims in general. What about when that is brought into the conversation, as kids are wont to do?
In a classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so that's a real tricky issue, obviously. And, you know, this is where good teaching and good teachers come into play. I think they play a critical and vital role. We can write the curriculum and make suggestions about how you might handle those kinds of things, but ultimately we cannot instruct people and say, this is how you have to plan for this. Mm-hmm. But that's what we do is we say, look, be prepared. You know, discussions can take an unintended consequence. One thing I'd say, it's fairly clear, and we've revised our curriculum over time, really in response to events. But the sort of feelings about Islam, generalizations about Muslims, I would say that's actually increased over the last 15 years. If you think back to immediately after September 11th, President Bush was very, very careful to talk about Islam with as one of the world's great religions and with respect. And that discourse has changed somewhat. So I think we feel responsible to begin to offer information about Islam and Muslims, and but it's also a very tricky and sensitive and difficult issue. That said, it's critically important. It's critically important. We can see a rise in Islamophobia in the United States right now.
As far as parents' reactions to the curriculum and the discussions, you know, a lot of times parents haven't talked to their own kids about it. Maybe they're surprised when their kid comes home and starts asking them about it.
I would imagine that's the case. Have a student, a son, who's in high school right now, and if he came home and started asking me questions, I would be very, very happy.
Uh-huh.
The idea of engaging in this really important and complicated topic. We do get positive feedback from that.
Mm-hmm.
But the best person to ask about those experiences, I would say, are people who are teachers, right? Those mm-hmm. who are in the classroom and see what that's like.
Which is what we're going to do next. We're going to have a Columbus social studies teacher, high school social studies teacher, join us on the air with my other guest, Andy Blackadar. He's curriculum development director at the Choices Program. That's a nonprofit organization devoted to developing curriculum on timely, serious subjects based at Brown University. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. We're talking about curriculum, educational curriculum post 9/11. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how the lessons of 9/11 are taught in our schools. Still with us from Brown University is Andy Blackadar. He's the Curriculum Development Director at the Choices Program. That's a nonprofit organization that develops lesson plans on historical events the likes of 9/11. And Andy Blackadar, thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Joining us also by phone is Columbus Public Schools High School Social Studies teacher Jennifer Laplace. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been teaching for 19 years, most recently at Centennial High School. When did you start thinking about how to incorporate 9/11 into your lesson plans. We were talking about that earlier. Is it the sort of thing that a week after it happened, 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks before the next, you know, the next fall? How did you think about that?
Well, I think that day I was teaching in a classroom when that event happened, and trying to get the students to understand that what events were happening. They knew something was going on. And then incorporating a lot of research after that in future classes. It's something that we had talked about actually the week before about Al-Qaeda in class. And so the kids were very, very, very cognizant of what was going on. And so from that day, we've talked about 9/11.
You teach at Centennial High School, as I mentioned.
Yes.
How has the teaching of 9/11 changed over time? In the context of how your students have changed over time?
Well, this is the first year that we have students born in 2002. And so they were born after 9/11. So many of them, probably in the last couple of years, they don't even have a memory of it. So teaching it in context of memories, video, audio, written form, also looking at the development of the World Trade Center area, so teaching it in those contexts so they have some understanding.
When the first year after it occurred, what were the conversations like with your students then?
Raw, very raw, still raw, and very, because we then went into Afghanistan and Iraq after that.
Yeah.
So the kids were very raw about that. I was teaching government at that time, so students were going to be voting and students were going to be going off into the military. So it was very raw at that point.
Andy Blackadar, we were talking about how, you know, the curriculum changed over time. You've got the first year after on down the line. Can you talk about that a little bit more about you had to change the curriculum that you were developing because the students were changing?
Absolutely. And events also were changing. And, you know, we began trying to make sense of, like all Americans are trying to do, make sense of why this happened. What was Al-Qaeda? What were their motivations? But then we did go into Afghanistan and we did go into Iraq, and that was connected to all this. Other important issues have come up that are part of the conversation. So, for example, the use of enhanced interrogation or torture against terrorism suspects. We now live in a world of Edward Snowden and surveillance and digital surveillance, and kids are you know, they're digital natives. This is their world. Question of drones and the idea. So all of these, and then we also have events of domestic terrorism taking place in the United States. These have been very, very vivid. So we try to work very, very hard to give students the tools to think about these things and to analyze them. So that in that way, the curriculum has changed and evolved.
Jennifer Laplace, is there anything that comes close to 9/11 when it comes to the profundity of it in what you teach?
I think in teaching genocide, uh-huh, as well as World War II and the atrocities, and, but 9/11 is probably the closest thing that they have in terms of understanding, because their parents lived through it, their parents talk about it. So the use of choices materials that provides all that extra materials that the students can talk about, things like the enhanced interrogation that Andy mentioned, is so important when teaching these materials or these ideas.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that kids care just as much today as they did 15 years ago?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I found that they have become more interested. I teach AP government, and my students want to talk about that event. They want to talk about how we are in the world in terms of what we've reacted to in terms of terrorism, domestic terrorism, as well as international terrorism. They're very, very engaged in it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how the lessons, the history of 9/11, which occurred 15 years ago on September 11th, are taught in the classroom is something that my guest Jennifer LaPlace said she started thinking about that day when she was teaching a class and learned about the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the, of course, the commercial airliner that was crashed into the field in Pennsylvania. If you have a question or comment about how you were taught, how you taught this topic, we'd love to hear from you. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page. Jennifer LaPlace, what about the politics of all of this? How do you temper that when it comes to teaching in a classroom?
It's very difficult because students have their views and their opinions, moderation, looking at documents and interviews. It's important that students see multiple perspectives as well. And so all of that is provided to students. We talk about evidence. We just can't say what we want to say. They have to provide evidence to support their claims. That is probably the most important thing to temper the vitriol sometimes of this is my side or that is my side.
Mm-hmm. What happens when you have a diverse classroom and the issue of Islam comes up and its relationship to 9/11?
I do have a diverse classroom. Mm-hmm. Centennial is probably one of the most diverse schools in Columbus. We've had students who've been afraid because of the anti-Islamic issues that have come up. But we talk through them. That's what we do with schools and in social studies. And we're given materials and curriculum to cover that provides that open, free space that, that students feel safe in saying what they feel.
And what about parent reaction? I asked Andy Blackadar about that, and he said, you know, it's probably better to ask someone out in the trenches.
I've only received positive feedback. I've had parents who are interested in the material, have read the material.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in what their students are learning. I've received emails from parents as well when we're going over topics, but it's generally been very, very positive.
Is it something that you tell parents, this is what we're going to do? I know when my kid was in high school, everything was already posted and we knew what they were studying, but is it something special?
We had open house last night. We went over that. We were going to go over that. So they also received that in writing with the course syllabi, and they also received that through messages as well, that we are going to go over this material.
And Andy Blackadar, you talked about role-playing and how that is incorporated into the materials that you've developed in teaching 9/11. Jennifer LaPlace, have you done anything like that?
Yes, we have done the options role play. Students have very intricate and very detailed discussions. They're very mature because they want to prove their side, and they might even be on a side that they disagree with and have to present that material. And it's teaching them those skills that they're going to need out in the real world when they become adults and they are voters and they're looking at the various issues.
What about from where you sit as a teacher, Jennifer LaPlace, what's it like to teach such an emotional issue that first year, that first time you had to get up and talk about it? What was that like?
Very difficult because I think to go into social studies and being American, we're so passionate about our country. But we have to, as teachers, temper our emotions and make sure our students are in a safe and caring environment that they feel safe.
Harold in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Harold.
Hi. A quick question about curriculum. It seems to me that the curriculums have had blinders on for a long time because when I was in school, and I'm a veteran, go back many years to the 50s,
mm-hmm.
they taught civics. And today in the school, civics has been essentially banned as a topic. They don't teach the history of work. They don't teach the history of government in the same way they did back then with respect to citizenship and things of that nature. They don't teach a lot about the history of economics.
Was that your experience when your kids?
Oh, when you watch the outcome, I guess what I'm saying to you is that I'm wondering how that affected the decisions around 9/11, before, during, and after, with having a citizenry that basically is sheltered from the truth about citizenship, the truth about civics, the truth about the history of work, and a lot of other topics that are either ignored or just not taken up in school curriculum anymore.
Jennifer LaPlace, what's been your experience when it comes to those issues?
Civics is taught through government. I teach AP U.S. government, and that is probably where we begin in most government classes. We teach civics, we teach understanding in terms of the history of work. We do that through our U.S. history classes. So that material is covered. Our curriculum department in Columbus City Schools is very, very good in making sure that we get materials that are up to date and that are appropriate, student appropriate, but also push the idea of citizenship and economics, which they do get in their 11th grade government class.
Thanks a lot, Harold, for that question. Anyone else, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Andy Blackadar, you know, when we think about teaching something like 9/11 and the history of 9/11, it's incredibly multifaceted when you actually sit and think about it.
Oh, I agree. There are so many dimensions of it, and they've all been raised. It goes back to history and U.S. foreign policy. Our experience domestically in the United States; those are all pieces of it. So it's important to have historical understanding and the U.S. role in the world and what we've done. But you also need to begin to master some of those very issues of civics that the caller raised as well. Mm-hmm. What are the processes for making decisions about what U.S. foreign policy should be? And what Jennifer described to me seems to be a perfect civic lesson, right? The idea of having civil discourse in a classroom about a policy issue. Mm-hmm. So there are many, many elements for it. And hopefully, and we design the curriculum this way as well, there are many, many threads that teachers can use and adapt and polish and sort of further their own pieces of interest. So, for example, if you were interested in the question of Islam in the world, this would be a good place to start. So the question of religion, the question of foreign policy, the question of use of force, the question about uniqueness of the United States and processes of government. There's lots of opportunities for teachers to take the materials we provide and go in the direction that they need to fill the needs of their students.
Looking back, Jennifer LaPlace, 19 years, well, 15 years, I should say, when 9/11 occurred, was there anything you were doing that first few years in teaching about 9/11 that you don't do anymore?
I think as the curriculum has gotten better, the information has gotten better. When I was introduced to Choices, I think I use a lot of their curriculum because I think they do such a fantastic job. But having that multifaceted piece where you're looking at both foreign and domestic policy, how that affects foreign policy, I think we've added more foreign policy pieces on how we as Americans look out towards the world as well as how the world looks at us. And so having all of that information has been beneficial to my teaching. I think it's gotten much better because of the Choices materials.
Is there a difference between how you handle the material with a ninth grader and a senior?
Absolutely.
How?
Absolutely. In terms of maturity level, so for example, in my AP class, we will talk about foreign policy. It's an upper level class. With juniors, we'll talk foreign policy, we'll be more specific, we will talk about rights and responsibilities, and the Constitution, where my freshmen, my ninth graders, mm-hmm. haven't had that information. There are things that we need to be more sensitive with, especially if we have, like I said, a very, very diverse environment at our school at Centennial. And so we need to make sure that we make it a safe environment for our freshmen to build on that knowledge so eventually they can get to that point when they're in 11th grade and we can have those discourses that are so paramount to understanding our democracy.
So how do you make a safe environment in the ninth grade that prepares them for a more sophisticated 11th grade conversation?
So we make sure that we start with smaller discussions. So, for example, we will talk about 9/11. Right now, we're covering things like historical thinking and sourcing, that they understand evidence. And so a few years ago, some of my students put together a video of adult reactions to 9/11.
Uh-huh.
They didn't remember it. And so we'll actually look at those videos, and we will talk about the material that we're covering in terms of that as part of the lesson. Eventually, we'll have a stronger discussion when we do talk about terrorism, and I do use some of the choices materials with them. Some of it is too much for them, so like foreign policy issues or even some of the more emotional issues in terms of religion, because we have, as I said, a very diverse population. So we talk about not only Islam, but we talk about Christianity and Judaism in terms of the idea of terrorism as well, which is laid out very well in the choices material.
And Andy Blackadar, as far as visuals, you know, I watched again another for the thousandth time one of the videos of the second plane hitting the World Trade Center, which is probably one of the most visceral experiences I've ever had in a newsroom back when I was an editor in a newspaper. You know, I was one of those people sitting around the TV when kind of going, how's the front page going to change? And then the second plane hit. How much does that visual play into the lessons of 9/11?
Yeah, I would. Well, I think they're very important, and visual information is extremely important to communicating ideas. That said, we're also extremely careful about the kinds of images that we would show and portray, put in front of students, right? Because it is an extremely emotional piece. But if you know, there are a lot of images that can illustrate certain things nicely. We actually use a lot of political cartoons as a way of illustrating diverse points of view, as well. So those are key, and visuals. There's a lot of information that can be conveyed through them.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate your time, Andy Blackadar.
You're welcome. Thanks for raising this important topic.
Andy Blackadar is the Curriculum Development Director at the Choices Program. That's a nonprofit organization that develops curriculum at Brown University. Also, Jennifer Laplace, thanks to you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer Laplace teaches social studies at Centennial High School in the Columbus Public Schools District. More on this topic when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A generation of young readers have no firsthand knowledge of the 9/11 terrorist attacks 15 years ago. For those too young to remember, children's authors, including our next two guests, have tackled this sensitive subject in fiction and nonfiction. Don Brown is an award-winning author and illustrator of many picture book biographies for young readers. His book about 9/11 is entitled America is Under Attack, September 11, 2001, The Day the Towers Fell. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Don Brown.
Hi, how are you? It's a pleasure to be here today.
Jewel Parker Rhodes is professor of creative writing and American literature at Arizona State University and an award-winning author of books for both children and adults. Her most recent book is entitled Towers Falling. She also joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Jewel Parker Rhodes.
Thank you very much.
Jewel, you took a fictional approach to 9/11. You tell the story of a fifth grader who already is struggling with some issues at home, a new school, and so forth, and how she is taught about 9/11. What were the challenges in writing for younger people on this topic?
Well, one of the things is that you always want to handle trauma carefully and yet have the children be able to make connections or have entryway points into the material so that they can develop the empathy and understanding of the event. So by having Deja be homeless and not knowing that it's because her father was a hero at 9/11 becomes a part of a personal quest, personal mystery, personal growth. And in the school, she also learns with her teacher starting with the concrete. What is home, says her Miss Garcia, the fifth grade teacher. And she says, well, you know, home is living in a homeless shelter, and I don't want to write about that. Mm-hmm. But her little brother has drawn some cutout dolls of people holding hands. And the teacher says to her, but isn't home really about relationships? So bit by bit, the story expands so that Deja feels, yes, home is the network of social relationships, and she's connected to the people in the towers, the people in the state, the people in the country, that connection of all of us as Americans is what gave us the resilience to survive and thrive after 9/11.
And I guess, you know, my next question was, what were you saying in this book about how children should be taught about 9/11? And I guess you just answered that question.
Well, you know, they also should be taught because you take the average fifth grader, in 8 years, they'll be ready to join the military service and fight and die for our country or become home as a wounded soldier. They will also be able to vote. They will go to college. They may be marrying. So when do we start teaching citizenship? In America, we've been teaching civics lessons sort of less and less across our curriculum. And I really want to say we have to prepare the citizens of the future. The trouble is that unlike, you know, World War II, which is far past, 9/11 is so recent that a lot of the teachers who are being called upon to teach it are themselves traumatized. So that there's this double whammy of the teachers having their pain and not wanting to talk about it, and yet we have this obligation to the generations born post 9/11 to teach them, because one day they'll have their trauma. They'll have, you know, something that happens to America or something that we're involved in the world stage, and they will be the adults who will be called upon to respond. And I want them to respond with the beauty of how our nation responded post 9/11.
That's Jewel Parker Rhodes, also with us, Don Brown, both award-winning authors who have tackled the issue of 9/11 in children's books. If you have a question or comment about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page as well. Don Brown, your book is a factual account of what happened on September 11th. You lay it out plain and simple with beautiful watercolors. How would you describe your approach in dealing with this material and why you took this approach?
I think you hit on the head, plain and simple. I'm a big fan of the simple declarative sentence, and I think that works particularly well with the kids. Mm-hmm. I try not to freight my sentences with value-laden words or emotional words. I didn't say things were horrible or things were awful or this was tragic. Mm-hmm. I think if you lay it out exactly and cleanly, the kids will take from it what they can. It's almost like self-regulating. And in this way, I don't have to endow a particularly tragic event beyond its inherent tragedy. You know, so if I keep it very clean, very simple, very straightforward, they'll be able to digest it in a manner that they're able to. I believe that kids, I have a high regard for kids. I think we perhaps protect them, shelter them a little too much, or more than I think necessary. I think they're able to understand things and appreciate them on their level in a ways that we may not fully appreciate. So I try to speak to that.
I was asking the curriculum developer and the teacher earlier that I spoke with about this, you know, what kind of feedback they get from parents. And I know that you probably both have heard from lots of different readers about your books and their parents. You probably have read the books with them. Don Brown, I mean, what kind of feedback have you received from parents about this? And maybe how it's changed over time. I think your book's about 5 years old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it came out on the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, okay.
I get uniformly very good results or reviews or responses from the book. Many people say that they don't have another resource, many other resources for teaching, you know, the factual side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it fills something of a vacuum. Just as a quick aside, you know, but for me in making the book, the larger problem was the imagery.
Yeah,
I do my own illustrations, and as you know, imagery can be extraordinarily powerful. So in the construction of the book, that was much more difficult to maneuver than the writing of the book. And I had many back and forths with my editor about what was appropriate and what wasn't appropriate, and even to this day, I'm still, you know, a wonder or question about the choices we made, whether we could have gone further in some places or pulled back in others.
Well, I mentioned earlier that image, you know, of the second plane hitting the tower remains one of, I don't know if you ever get that, you ever wipe it out. I watched it again this morning, and it elicited emotion as well, once again. Jewel Parker Rhodes, as far as the content of your story, you know, the substance of it, how did you think about that in terms of the fifth graders that you were writing it for?
Well, I have two scenes in which I evoke through imagery the same way that, you know, Don tries to evoke with his visual imagery, the sort of the kind of horror connected to the towers being on fire. And I really felt as though I had to do that in two short, you know, but controlled bursts, because kids today, they can turn on their computers, they can look at their iPhone, and they're going to see those images anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know, my obligation then is to give them the context for those images. The images by themselves are just the horror. And as a novelist, I try to add in that beautiful after response of what it meant for our citizenry to come and hold together to our values. But I also have a character named Ben, who's an Arizona cowboy-loving, book-loving boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Ben, and Ben is an artist. So in some ways, Ben's artistry shows the memorial and shows the sacred, beautiful space that it is. And I was just at the memorial just like literally 10 minutes ago, and reminded again of how art can render, you know, things so much more beautiful and make it a cathartic, healing response. And that's what I try to do with my work, but not to patronize the kids, to give a sense of this is what happened, but this is what you can't see on a video screen.
Wait, can I ask a question to Jewel?
Yeah, sure. Dan Brown.
Hey, Jewel. I know what I struggle with, especially with my history books, is context. You know, because 9/11 happened in a moment of time that the kids are not aware of, and placing that context is very important to telling a story. So I'm wondering, did you have that same kind of struggle, placing it in time so the reader could understand what was going on at that time and why it happened?
Well, actually, though, I didn't try to do the context of the time 15 years ago. Deja's always saying, well, that happened 15 years ago. Why should I care?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question that I try to answer. And Sabine, who's a Muslim Turkish American, she speaks to the fact that now, you know, her family hardly ever goes back to Turkey because of airport security. She talks about how, you know, Turkish Muslims were not involved in the attacks, and how on 9/11 that her family tends to keep a low profile and very often don't go outside. And Ben talks about his dad, who signed up for, you know, four subsequent tours of duty. And so though he doesn't know 9/11, what he does know is the post-traumatic stress that his dad is suffering from. And what Deja learns is, oh my gosh, my dad has a lung disease from working at the towers. And so all of their lives are affected today by what happened 15 years ago.
I have to ask you, Jewel, about the name Deja.
Yes?
Is it the sort of a thing about, I'll tell you what it made me think about was, you know, unless we understand history or learn history, we're doomed to repeat those mistakes. And so the deja vu thing.
You know, I didn't think about that at all. And I was in Georgia this past weekend, and somebody said, oh, deja vu. And I thought, oh, I'm so smart. My unconscious is so smart. But I just picked it because I liked the sound of the name.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that, you know, in terms of, you know, the Twin Towers, that financial center, you know, everyone in, well, the terrorists included, they thought that they could attack America's financial power and that that was all of what America was about, you know, finances, the Twin Towers, capitalism. It was important for me to have Deja be an impoverished girl, you know, because it sort of spoke to the fact, no, America, and that's what the novel is about, is so much more than what these terrorists sort of narrowly sort of picked on, you know, as what they thought, you know, what we believed in, who we were. But Deja is a marvelous character, and I was just smart deja vu unconsciously.
You know, you've both written books about Hurricane Katrina, too, which wreaked its own sort of havoc, you know, on the Gulf Coast 10 years ago. Don Brown, your book is entitled Drowned City, Hurricane Katrina and New Orleans. Can you compare and contrast it with what you did when it comes to the 9/11 attacks?
It's very much the same, except it's for a slightly older audience.
Okay.
It's done in graphic novel, comic book style, and with a slightly older audience in mind. But in reality, it bears many similarities. The backbones are the same. It follows the story through time, and it uses individual people's remembrances as well-placed vignettes to explain what was going on. I try to stay out of the story. I love when there are characters who lived it and they can talk about the story and tell their stories and to move along the larger narrative. So in that sense, they're about the same. But because I'm dealing with a slightly older audience, I can be a little more explicit on, you know, the horrible, tragic side of that.
A little more graphic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, there are no dead people in the 9/11 book, and there are dead people in the Katrina book. So,
how did you decide that there were going to be no dead people in the 9/11 book?
That was a big battle with the editor and the publisher. I tell you, the biggest battle was over the jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about I had larger descriptions of that event written down, and I actually wanted to have, you know, people in the air. That was not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
that was just scotched right from the beginning. So in the end, the image in the book is of the people standing, looking out from the wreckage, looking out onto the ground, and the entire text is some of the trapped people jumped. That was it entirely. But the brevity of it, I think, gives it an added power.
Jewel, we just have about...
I have the jumpers, too, the Deja watches on the video, and does it with a beauty. And we it might be because it's been 15 years now,
yeah.
But I thought that was important because that's another context that, you know, that you can, the kids can see on the video, and children have asked me about that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we've talked about another kind of heroism for them determining their own fate. So it is a touchy thing, but I was able to put that in.
Yeah.
Jewel Parker Rhodes, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jewel Parker Rhodes, professor of creative writing and American literature at Arizona State University and author of Towers Falling. Also, Don Brown, author and illustrator of America is Under Attack, September 11, 2001, the day the towers fell. Thank you so much.
It was great. It was a treat to speak to with you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.